Well, hey, everybody, it's me, Dr. Kevin Stevenson. Thanks for joining me on this week's episode of I Don't Care With, of course, me, Dr. Kevin Stevenson. You're going to love today's episode. My guest is a blast, and we're going to have a lot of fun talking a wide array of things, healthcare, AI, baseball, a little bit of everything, and I think you're going to really get into this one. My guest today is Dr. Maureen Mo Canellis. She's the Associate Chief Medical Officer at UMass Memorial Medical Center, among many other hats that she wears that we're going to discuss today. So, Mo, welcome to I Don't Care.
Hi, thanks for having me, Kevin.
I'm glad to have you on. So we met at the Emergency Department Benchmarking Alliance Conference recently, and almost immediately I thought, hey, here's somebody that could go from talking about healthcare operations to AI to strategy to baseball without missing a beat. So for people who are just now meeting you, how did you become the person that so many people seem to call when the conversation turns to AI and healthcare?
Yeah, I've always been really interested in AI and how algorithms can help us be more efficient. That's actually why I went into emergency medicine in the first place, is how can we take chaos and have a controlled chaos to best help our patients flow through the hospital and through their care. And I started that actually by doing a research thesis in college on the Google algorithm. It was such an interesting topic for me, how they created Google and how it gave you the most efficient pathway through websites. And I said, I want to do emergency medicine to create similar algorithms. And so immediately after residency, when I finally had a little bit of time to myself, I said, let's get my MBA at MIT. They were gracious enough to allow me in. I met with a wonderful professor, Professor Parakis, who welcomed me into her space of machine learning and healthcare and operations. And we have just been going for the last six years now, almost, working together in the AI space to create novel healthcare algorithms to improve patient flow.
Very cool. So there are so many healthcare companies right now that claim they're AI enabled, which to me usually means that somebody added ChatGPT to a slide deck and raised venture capital. But from your perspective, what really impresses you when you see AI being used in emergency medicine or hospital operations?
Yeah, you make a really good point there, is that it kind of reminds me back when NIH used to put the word cancer into a grant, you'd get the money. Now you put AI into the grant, you get the money. But AI is what you tell your CEO you're doing. Machine learning is what you tell other people you're doing. And what you're really doing a lot of the times when they're AI enabled, it's data science. It's like a linear algorithm at best, right? And so what really impresses me is kind of when I sit down and talk, like when I talked with your team, them having that additional knowledge beyond that perfect slide deck they've practiced a bunch of times. When I can walk up to that person talking and say, tell me about this more granular part that really tells me you understand data in, data out, what an algorithm means. That's why I'm impressed, because that's when it's like, okay, I see maybe you made it a little more layman's terms on the slide, really get it. And so I think it really takes not just reading the slide deck, being impressed, but having that secondary conversation where you get to know them more and asking questions about AI that really impresses me, if they can think on their feet and answer.
Yeah. Hey, you know, as a former hospital C-suite guy, you know, we were hearing about AI a few years back and we're really, you know, really hesitant about getting into it because of security issues and all of that. But you were telling me in Nashville about a group that is really wrapping their arms around that. Talk a little bit about that group.
Yeah, the group is called CHAI in short, but it's the Coalition for Health AI. They're doing kind of what the EDBA has been trying to do in the ED all along. The EDBA has been trying to create standards and creating apples to apples comparisons and giving people kind of a baseline of how they should look at operations data. And CHAI is doing that on a much larger scale in terms of healthcare AI in total. So they're helping create standards, mapping them from other well-known standards like IEEE, which is international engineering. They're mapping it from other government organizations and saying, here's how other groups standardize the use of AI. Let's not reinvent the wheel. Let's take that regulation, that governance, and help hospitals understand. Because as you said, you guys were worried about not adding AI because of security. People aren't thinking about security, right? A lot of them still aren't. And CHAI helps give them a pathway to understand what encryption and privacy means, without needing a big legal team to do it for them.
Yeah, that's great. And now, didn't you say that they're working with a joint commission as well?
Yeah, the joint commission has a joint paper, like a white paper about what the regulations are and what responsible AI should look like. It's only 3 pages, really easy to read.
Okay. But it sounds like there might come a day that during a joint commission survey that any AI linked process in the hospital will need that CHI certificate. You think that we're going to go to that?
I think it's the next natural step. I'm not saying it's going to be 6 months from now or a year from now, but when having them already come out and say the Joint Commission approves these standards and we are aligned with CHI, it is a natural progression to say, okay, how are you aligning with these regulations? And it's better to get in front of it, do the model card, get in line with the regulations now. So when that comes through, you can tell hospitals, we've already done it. We don't have to stop production. We can keep going.
Yeah, that's great. Hey, we've talked about the Emergency Department Benchmarking Alliance where we met, but I'll bet because I've been doing this for almost 40 years, I wasn't aware of EDBA. Talk a little bit about EDBA and your involvement in that.
Oh, I could talk about this for hours, Kevin.
I knew you could. That's why I teed you up.
I am very biased. I love the EDBA very much. It has done so much for my career and for me as a person. But in short, the EDBA is the Eating Benchmarking Alliance. It was started in the 90s by the first ever emergency medicine resident in the United States, Bruce Janiak. And he believed that when an administrator, no offense to administrators, Kevin, but
that's all right, whatever.
When a healthcare executive came to him and said, "You're doing these things wrong," he said, "Well, who says I'm doing them wrong? What about other EDs? How do I know I'm doing a good job?" And so they used to take paper charts and just share them across hospitals in Ohio saying, "Well, how long are your patients in the ER? Who's not being seen in your ED?" And then he created this nonprofit organization where the goal is just to be able to compare yourself to other EDs that are like you and give you that data to be strong so that you can go to your administration and say, "No, I am doing the right things." And so it's just this wonderful nonprofit all about giving the data back to the people.
Very cool. And yeah, again, I was surprised that I'd never heard of it, but it sounds like most of the emergency departments across the country are involved in it.
Yeah, I think we have our executive director is going to hate me for not knowing the number off the top of my head, but we have, I believe, 1,800 EDs within our data, which is a huge number of EDs in the United States. We have pediatrics, academics, rural. So we are a large generalization of EDs. We even used to be cited by the CDC along with their national survey, comparing how their national survey of 80 EDs compared with ours. And so we used to be quoted a lot across government agencies as well.
Very cool. So every seasoned ED physician has that gut feeling about a patient before the data even catches up. So do you think the AI is getting us closer to capturing that intuition, or are we still a long way from that?
I'm a bit more skeptical. It's one of those things where the more you know, the more you know that we don't know. So I've had this thought for a long time that how do you get that clinical gestalt into AI, right? That's the idea, is that spidey sense that says there's something wrong, or I'm going to admit them and I can't quite tell why. And I do think AI is getting there, but we don't have to wait for AI to do it for us. Why can't we have an AI system like your great system out of Corio ED say, "Hey," at the very beginning of the encounter, say, "Hey, doc, your first gestalt, they're going to be admitted or not. Yes, no binary, a quick yes, another pop-up." We hate pop-ups, but one quick one, yes, no. Add that into the algorithm. Why not take that gestalt and see if that improves the outcome? That way the docs are involved. Increased adoption, increasing using their brain power to help the algorithm. And yes, it's another pop-up, but what's one more sometimes?
Yeah, why not? And thanks for giving the shout out to Corio ED. Yeah, that is one of the first companies that I started working with whenever I opened my advisory firm. And it was because, you know, whenever I first met them, they were looking to solve a problem that had been an issue for me throughout my career in EDs, and that is throughput. And yeah, we all know that ED throughput is dependent upon what's going on upstairs, but there are a lot of things that they can do that really advances that. And so, you know, your willingness to sit down with the team and really understand what they were trying to do meant a lot. So thanks for doing that. And that's one of the things I love about talking with you is I got to admit, whenever you walked away after we spoke at the conference, I told everybody, I said, guys, you have no idea how flipping smart she is, but how down to earth she is. And you know, you explain these incredibly complex things without sounding like some TED Talk robot, which, you know, we all run into and is so irritating. So if you're talking to a hospital CEO like me, who's curious about AI, but is honestly terrified of wasting millions of dollars on nonsense, where should they actually start?
Yeah, and well, I will say we are very lucky at UMass that our hospital CEO is an ED doc, and he is actively going through AI courses. They're even paying for us to go in the AI courses with him. So he's not scared of it at all. But I understand the sentiment that many are. And so I think where you start with AI is you can't have the rose-colored glasses, right? You can't say, I'm going to do this because it sounds cool. Like, you can't get into that AI is the way it is. Let's bring AI in. You need to bring it into the right place at the right time and the right model. And so the kinds of, you know, it's with any product, the kinds of people who oversell their product, whether it's a drug, AI, or even a person who's being hired, they sound too good to be true. Take a step back, get someone else to evaluate it for you and to really have a less biased way of doing it. And so I'd say for hospital CEOs, you need to just really bring in a whole team. When you speak to these vendors, it can't just be you in the room anymore. You've got to bring other people with you who better understand it and translate anything you might need, and then question them in real time. Is this really doing what you say you're doing? So just got to open up the floodgates a bit to a larger team, not just you in the room anymore.
Yeah. And I think you've got to be really proactive, because AI is here. AI is going to be utilized across the board. It's amazing, you know, going back to what I said earlier, you know, most of the companies that I'm advising now all have that AI component that is honestly pretty well thought out. I was talking with one of my former administrative residents who's now an administrator for a rural hospital in New Mexico, and he said they're even putting together an AI team at his small hospital because they need every advantage that they can get. And, you know, they're in a place where the workforce is incredibly limited. So they've got to be as efficient, as effective as possible. So they're looking at AI, again, throughout the house, whether it be in the ED or the back office, or, you know, even in their physician clinics with inbound and outbound calls. So they're looking at every aspect of that. And I found it to be really interesting that a 25-bed hospital in very, very rural New Mexico gets it and understands that we've got to step out on a limb and start trying to work through this, because it's coming.
Yeah, I totally agree.
So we both love baseball. We found that out pretty early. Even though you're a Cardinals fan and I'm a Rangers fan, and you happen to bring up the World Series years ago that I've been trying to forget, thank you for that. But the best thing I found is that we share a common hatred for those cheating Astros. Love that, you know, and I said it specifically to many of my friends who are Astros fans. So let me ask this.
That is one of the biggest reasons my husband and I are not moving to Houston. Even though he works for JSC out of NASA, we're not moving there.
There you go. And that's smart, because, you know, it's Astros country, and you don't want to be a part of that. But let me ask you this. Okay, if healthcare AI were a baseball game right now, what inning are we in?
Oh, see, I think we're still at like two or three. Maybe three. Enough to be a little hungry, enough to be a little into the game. You know, maybe there have been some hits, maybe some runs, but I don't know that we've reached that, even the pinnacle, like the seventh inning, like where the pinnacle is, right? And we're certainly not the ninth. So I think three is, you know, you've got a third of the way there. You're getting ready.
You go through the order once, yeah. You know. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's where it is, because like you said, you answered the order once. It's a great metaphor because we've seen that now there's an AI tool for almost anything you could want in your life. Oh, like really anything you could possibly want in your life. I just saw one where they're using a toothbrush, a map of like the teeth and a special toothbrush to see where your kids brush their teeth. I know. I'm just saying, so anything you could possibly want, you can do AI, you know, as AI as you think it could be. And I just think that means that we've, quote, gone through the order. And now we're going to pick out who is going to do well in the game. And I think that's going to start coming over the next years.
That's crazy. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm gonna show how old I am. Because back in the day, back in the 60s, the dental hygienists would come to schools back in the day, and they would give to the kids the toothbrush and toothpaste, and you would brush your teeth in school, and then they would give you a little tablet that you chewed, and then you would smile, and they had the light, and it showed you where you didn't brush. So now we've gone from something so easy. Yeah, you're laughing at me. I can tell. But that really happened. But so you're telling me now that AI could tell me where my grandchildren aren't brushing?
Apparently. But I mean, I don't know. I have a toddler that I have to hold down and brush her teeth. So I know where she's brushing. I don't need that right now, but maybe later in life.
That's insane. Okay. Well, you know, that goes so far beyond me tweaking photographs and doing the fun little peppermint suit Christmas pictures that we did this year. It's something actually useful. So that's good. So you mentioned your husband, you mentioned that he works for NASA, and good for you. You've made that smart decision not to move to Houston. You got to tell me what he did on the Artemis II, because I think it's so cool. And can you really tell us what he did without having to kill my audience and me?
No, there's two reasons I can't tell you. One, I can't tell you because I'm not allowed to. Two, I would probably butcher the layman's way because I don't really understand. He's too smart. But I will say I have a beautiful photo of him holding our son, our baby son, in front of our TV with his software on it, and it's all blacked out because we're not allowed to see it. But he did, what I can say is one of the things he's done is help create this like image recognition system where, you know, when they are flying or when they had Columbia tragedies like the Challenger, they had certain parts of the shuttle damaged. And so now they have cameras looking at all different sides of the shuttle all the time and the space station. And so they can actually use those kind of cameras to better evaluate when there's been damage on the space station, on the shuttle. And so he helped create this kind of visual management system where you can see all the different things at once, and it creates a really nice dashboard to look at. And then he also created another software system that actually the astronauts used. So it was a very great day. This actually started long ago when he was able to say his code was actually being used by astronauts in space. So that was a great pinnacle of his career, was seeing Artemis go and knowing he had a part in it.
That's incredibly cool. I'm just thinking about your kids. I mean, oh my gosh. Now, do you already have the wall where all their Nobel Prizes are going to be put up on the wall when they're older? Because they have no choice having parents like you guys. So,
yeah, I know you say that, but one of our great friends is literally a PhD rocket scientist out of NASA, and his wife is literally a neurosurgeon.
Oh, crud. Okay.
So I'm just, kids might have won Nobel Prize. Their kids have like 10.
Yeah. That's wild. Yeah. Okay. We're not going to go down that road. So between what he does and what you do in healthcare innovation, your household conversations have to be incredible. So do you see any parallels between aerospace and healthcare when it comes to decision-making, risk, trust in technology?
Oh, so many. And we one of the things we bond about is that idea of how we overlap so much in our work without stepping on each other's toes. I can leave and go to work, you know, and I'm not working directly beside him. And there's actually a really interesting way that they're looking at walking on the moon, right? Because the next step is to be on the moon. And so he does AI with robotics. And so he says, you know, let's say they want, one of the things that they're doing is they need to collect certain rocks right? A lot of moon stuff is actually geology. So if you want to be an astronaut, maybe be a geologist first. And so they need to say, okay, how much oxygen can I use? And how far can I walk on the moon before I need to turn around and get to that barrier where I now need to turn around and immediately go back to have enough oxygen to return? And so it ends up being this AI-driven pathway saying you can reach this border on this crater at this rock, and it can draw you a really AI-generated map saying this is the border. You cannot go past this border. That's what they're doing. And they take risk. You know, what's the incline? What's the decline? Is there a boulder? And they take risk along with it, and they decide the most efficient path to these borders using limited resources. It's just like hospital systems. You have limited resources, which are beds, consultants, drugs. You need to figure out the most efficient way to use them with the constraints you have. So we have many conversations about the overlap, but I will say most of our talks aren't that smart. It's a lot of arguing about the Cubs versus the Cardinals, because he's unfortunately a Cubs fan. So, and arguing which kid, will the kids get to be Cardinals fans or Cubs fans? So
yeah.
We are not sure yet. Still, it's still up.
Yeah. You know, it must be difficult raising kids in a divided household.
Yeah.
That's great. So you spend time with such a wide variety of healthcare folks, you know, physicians, execs, innovators, operators. What's something about the future of healthcare that you're really passionate about that still makes people uncomfortable whenever you bring it up?
Oh, well, I mean, boarding, fixed boredom, right? The financial investments that are required to fix boarding, right? Because they're at odds with each other. The inpatient, the way that our revenue system is set up for hospitals to generate revenue is broken. And so when you bring up boarding to a boardroom and you say, we need to invest X, Y, and Z into it, it's like they see it as a money pit. Because in a way it might be. I have a whole paper about how boarding stroke patients in the ED cost twice as much than when they're on the floor. It's a money pit. But if you can use AI and data-driven financial analysis, like the ones that I've been able to do before, and say, hey, here is the projected, using the simulation AI, here's the projected ROI of this implementation, you kind of get an idea of how deep that money pit is before you start to make money. It makes people uncomfortable, but if you can start giving them, here is the maximum you need to spend for this output, that's going to get you a little more movement in the boardroom. And I think it makes people uncomfortable, but it's the way it's going to be.
Yeah. Well, it really does, because I mean, when you start talking about that, the multifaceted aspect, I mean, you're talking about staffing, you're talking about potential expansion, but you know, that's a lot of capital that is so scarce right now. So yeah, I can see where that certainly makes everybody uncomfortable, because it always made me uncomfortable. Okay. Last question. Okay. What's one healthcare buzzword or trend or leadership phase that needs to be permanently retired today?
Oh, okay. All right. That's a good question. I think, other than like synergy, those kinds of terrible phrases that mean nothing. One of them that frustrates me and that I think needs to be removed, unless you get like some FDA approval to use the word, it needs to be real time. So many of these AI tools say we can give you real time X or real time data, but a lot of them who aren't able to be ingrained into the EMR like CorioED has been able to, are actually using data that updated at 9 a.m. earlier that day. And in the ED, I need things quicker, right? In a clinic visit where nothing's going to change, there's no new information coming in from the minute the patient walks in. This is ED patients who every minute there's a new update, new vitals, new labs. I need that real time to mean real time. And it's the same with what EDBA is trying to do. We have a whole definitions dictionary so that people use words correctly when they say length of stay, left before treatment complete, things like that. And if you're going to use real time, it needs to mean real time, but rarely does it. And I think it needs to be gone unless you have a certificate, maybe from Chai, saying, yes, it's real time.
I've never thought about that, but you're so right. Okay. I've asked a whole ton of questions. What do you want to share with my audience before we sign off?
Well, I think the biggest thing is you don't have to be an AI adopter, a lover of AI, and jump headfirst to be really good at AI for your hospital. You need to be, it's better to be critical and skeptical and bring something good in before you invest all that capital, all that time, because your time is valuable. Your hospital's time is valuable. Your doc's time is valuable. So be the skeptical front line before you bring it into your hospital. Your doctors, your nurses, your patients will thank you if you bring in the right tool at the right time, not just any tool.
That hits the nail on the head. You know, don't try to boil the ocean. Try to, you know, get those specific tools that are really going to make an impact quickly. So,
yeah.
Mo, that brilliant. It doesn't surprise me that you came up with that. So thanks so much. This has been so much fun. We, like I said, I knew we'd talk about a lot of different topics. But healthcare to baseball to space exploration, that totally threw me. So thanks for that.
They're my three favorite topics.
I can tell. So folks, I hope you've enjoyed today's episode as much as I did. Dr. Mo Canellis, you are welcomed on I Don't Care. Anytime you want to join me, you just give me a call and I'll make a spot for you.
Thanks, Kevin. I appreciate it. Happy to be on anytime.
Thanks. That's great. Folks, thanks so much for joining me on today's episode of I Don't Care with me, Dr. Kevin Stevenson. Always appreciate your time, and we'll see you next week. Take care.